Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at the Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome Yves Potvin from Canada. Welcome, Yves.
Hello, good morning.
No worries. How's the weather in Canada, Yves?
It's beautiful.
Beautiful. What's beautiful?
It's not 20 or anything like that, but it's one, two above, three above. The groundhog yesterday shows it's came out of his hole, and I don't know if he saw his shadow or not. But he went back in the hole, so we have another 6 weeks of spring or 6 weeks of winter.
Okay.
I don't understand the whole thing myself, but that's the prediction.
Okay, right. I can accept that because the, I guess without the groundhog, I listened to some of the long-range forecasters, and they're talking about sunspots, the sun activity, and how these solar flares actually cause oscillations in temperature on the Earth. And on the basis of that, you'll have more heat or you'll have more extremes in weather, so more rain or whatever. And the solar activity is way down. And, of course, because of this minimum, if you like, whatever it is, solar minimum of the sun, then, of course, the weather tends to plateau. So winter extends and perhaps summer isn't as hot. For us, we've had, in the last week or so, we've had about, on our property, about 4 inches of rain, and that's in suburbia in Adelaide, and that's been an absolute blessing because the garden is just so alive and growing well. And even the paddock, I had some sheep on there, they're now in the freezer, but the paddock is starting to regrow. That was down to dirt. I was buying in feed for them to keep them going, and that's starting to regrow. So it's lovely on that side of it.
Terrible.
And the thing is that we rely so much on the natural world. We rely on the wind, the rain, the sun, the earth for our sustenance. We rely on it so much, and it's not just a if you like a machine or a resource to exploit, but rather if we're good husbands to our what we've got control of, we can certainly provide ourselves with a sufficiency. And it's on that discussion that I'd actually like to draw us that thought, regeneration. I'm going to cut across now, Yves, so I'll lose your comments for a little bit just while I go through some web pages. So this is the Pilgrims of St. Michael and their front page to do with articles. And I wanted to actually talk about one of the articles in particular, and it's the social teaching on capitalism. Now, I read this article this morning, and I went across and I just picked up the encyclicals here, and there was at least four encyclicals. But what drew my attention this morning was actually an email I received from Patrick Wood. He runs this website, and it's in regard to this nightmare that the homeless are living. Not only in San Francisco. San Francisco is where the article is actually on about. But I looked at that man's face he's living a nightmare. He's living on basically a dump, and the clothes that he's in are the only things that he's probably got. And it's just such it's a horrid state of affairs when you start to realize that, hang on a sec, the resources. Are the resources, do they actually belong to the individuals who control them, or do the resources belong in a fair and equitable manner to all the people, all the community? Because this man is left behind. He's not actually getting access to the resources. He's not getting access to the industrial production that comes from technology that puts the, if you like, that harness the energy from the Niagara Falls and then convert that into machine energy, which actually produces machinery, builds machines that go and work the soil and then produce the goods and place them out there in the marketplace for consumption. He doesn't get access to that. And to me, it's a inequitable system. And the church teaches the inequity of capitalism. It teaches it. It says, yes, okay, the free enterprise, but you've got to differentiate between free enterprise and monopoly capitalism. They are two entirely different things. Monopoly capitalism is predatory in its nature. It is exploitive. It has no moral or ethical anchor. And yet, in a community, you need to have all of those things, taking into account your neighbour, that he gets fed and he gets clothed, if he can, if these things are physically possible. And in a modern industrial age that we live in, there is no physical reason why a share of this couldn't go to this man and to all those people who are homeless and destitute. There is no physical reason. The only thing that's stopping it is the financial system. And if you like, the desire, the political will within sufficient individuals to pursue a goal like this. Regeneration is a very, very important word, because to me, our culture has been deconstructed. It has degenerated to a stage of dog eat dog, and that is the problem. That is clearly a breakdown of our culture. It's a breakdown of our society. It's a reflection that the system for this man, for all those homeless, for those in need, is not working, and we need to revisit it, especially in the machine age that we live in. The technology is there. The abundance is there. Don't tell me there's not enough food, enough clothes. We could get the industry going if we don't have it here on our shore. We could certainly do it. And he misses out because the system is geared the wrong way. It is predatory. Your thoughts, Eve?
It's called the law of the jungle. The law of the jungle. And this is what the way the elites wants us to live. The law of the jungle. And every time I mention that, I'm thinking of the story about the monkeys in the jungle, and they're talking amongst themselves, and some of the monkeys are saying, I wonder if a man is smarter than we are. And some of the monkeys, you know, would agree, nah, they're not smarter than we are. Some would say, yeah, they are. So there was one, like a smart monkey, says, I'm going to clear this up. So I'm going to go down in the city and I'm going to find out really if man is smarter than a monkey. And so he goes down the city and there's a big store full of food, bananas, you know, but the door is locked and there's a homeless at the front and he's got no money. So right away, the monkey goes back to his friends and he says, don't worry. Man is not smarter than we are. Uh-huh. He says there's food everywhere, but they can't access it because they got no money. Uh-huh. So this is how smart our society is. Is there anybody left in this world that we can be smart enough to take care of those things? We sent a man to the moon. We have all kinds of science, and we cannot feed some poor people. Uh-huh. I mean, It's horrendous. It's a murderous.
Yeah.
And I feel like every time I go by a sign, it says Crime Stopper, 1-888, whatever the number is. We accept tips and all that. Mm-hmm. I would just like to go into one of them offices and say, I've got the culprit right here.
Yeah.
And show them a picture of the banking system. You know, this is the culprit right here.
Yeah.
The robber of society, the robber of our inheritance, the robber of our freedom.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to learn, and we have to get people thinking different, because it doesn't make any sense. 2 + 2 = 4, not 5.
That's right.
And this is what I keep telling people.
Yeah.
These people, they want 2 + 2 to be 5, mm-hmm. not 4.
Yeah.
So it's not reality. It's a lie, and we have to make people known about this.
Yeah, that's a very important point, Eve, that you look at the resources, you look at the industry, you look at our cultural inheritance. It is so, so abundant. It is so plentiful. It's not as if the crops can't be put in to feed this soul. It's not. And the thing is that In the, if you like, the turning away, when I talk about regeneration, I mean, the word in Christian circles might be something like repent. We repent. We acknowledge we're heading in the wrong direction. And we repent. We turn away from the direction we're heading. This man is our neighbor. This man is in need. And we are, whether we like it or not, we cannot provide jobs for this man when we've got machines to do the work. It's not a question of jobs. It's not a question of putting him to employment. He doesn't need to be gainfully employed. He's fighting for survival. What he needs is he needs money to buy the food. He needs sufficient there so that we can build him even a modest little mini house, a trailer, something, where he can rest his head in his own bed and out of the elements. I mean, these are the things that are well within our physical grasp. The question is intellectual. It's actually spiritual. It's actually spiritual. We have headed in the wrong direction. And as a people, we have to consider our neighbor. There's the story of the Samaritan who, the man was robbed. It was only the Samaritan who chose to stop and tend his wounds and then take him to a place where he could be looked after and cared for until he was recovered. It was the Samaritan who did it. He did what was right. He chose to do what was right. And the thing is that, to me, is the rich history that's in our culture. It's in ours, whether it's Canadian, American, English, Australian, whatever. This is the rich history of helping a mate. In Australia, we've got a story of this bloke called Simpson and his donkey. And in the battlefields, the First World War, Simpson would go out in the line of fire and recover the half-dead. He would recover them, put them on the donkey and bring them back to have their wounds tended. And then one day Simpson fell and he died. But the legend was true that he placed himself in a position where he served his fellow man no matter what the price. That to me is culture. That's our rich, rich history. It's one of service. It's not one of predatory nature, exploitation. It's not one of just confiscating everything you can, so that you've got wealth now, but nothing in heaven. I mean, you're devoid of anything that's of merit. It's ridiculous that you place something, a priority, an abstraction. You can only eat one meal at a time. You can only wear one set of clothing at a time. Why the pursuit of such material gains? It's unhealthy. And it's, to me, it's reflected in the culture. It's reflected in our society. We've got to turn away. We've got to turn back. This man needs our help. There are millions like him, not only in America, Canada, England, Australia. They are in desperate need, and it's only going to be satisfied if sufficient individuals choose to turn away. They compel, they force government to do things about it, and they themselves do all that they're capable of doing in their own sphere of influence. It works in both realms. You can't expect the government to do the things that you should be doing yourself. It works both ways. It's a calling on all of us, this regeneration of turning away and heading in the right direction. Your thoughts, Eve?
I can summarize the Ten Commandments of God. Love thy neighbor. That's pretty well the summarization of the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. We all have a mission in this world, whether it's to love your neighbor, love your children, love your family, love your community, live together with harmony. But as a social creditor, what am I doing? And I'm talking about myself, but it's not only me. It's hundreds of people that are involved in trying to regenerate the system, to change the system. So why should I do what I'm doing? Why should I go door to door or see families in their homes, talk to people on the street, trying to get involved in meetings, talking to university students? Am I wasting my time? No, I don't think I am. Even though last week I went to two different towns, and most of the streets I did, the stores are closed. They closed down the building. The business didn't go through, for different reasons. But in every business that I went into, nobody said, get out of here, you pervert, or you're promoting something. Everybody wanted to hear what I had to say, because I was talking to them about social justice, about loving your neighbor.
Yeah.
So everybody wanted to hear. Nobody said, get out of here, you're crazy or something like that. One or two might say, you know, I'm not interested, but that's about the top of it. Even people that had sign in the window that says, no soliciting. So I would go right in there even more and talk to the person. So all of us have a mission to make this beautiful doctrine of social credit, Douglass's social credit idea, we have to make it known to the world. This is our way of helping. Yeah, we can help a guy on the corner of the street. We can help, you know, there's a lot of people doing that anyway. But we have to change the whole system, because eventually we're going to run out of money ourselves, and we're not going to be able to help the poor. So we have to educate the people that there is a solution, a very viable solution, and we have to make it known to the people so that we can change the system. I know it's a big battle. I've got down here a note that says, David and Goliath. And we're the little Davids. You and I are the little Davids. And we're taking on this giant Goliath, who is the controller of the access to the goods of this earth. So we have to change that. So it's a question of changing people's mind. We have to change their thinking. And only then can we have the spread of loving your neighbor prominent.
Yeah. No, that's an excellent observation, Eve. I wrote yesterday, one of the journals, I talked about the inordinate influence of the mainstream media, but I had to clarify the mainstream media, because we think, okay, mainstream media, it might be print form, or it might be, you know, newspapers or whatever, or it might be through the TV. But in actual fact, mainstream media, in my view, includes and incorporates things such as schools. And then, of course, you've got the high schools and colleges. And then you've got universities. And the fact is that the inordinate influence that the universities and seminaries, they have on the leaders of tomorrow, and that they have been communizing us for at least the last 50 years. It started off as a trickle, and now it's a flood of this type of mentality of central power to the world through United Nations, through Agenda 2030, climate and all that, or central power through the world through monopoly capitalism, exploitive, predatory monopoly capitalism. It's both, it's the flip side of the same coin of totalitarianism. Mainstream media are owned and controlled by this money power. And so anyone who steps out of line will get the heat turned right up to them, to white hot. And I think that that's very important. If you're a person who enjoys your TV shows and that, you're actually going to be programmed through them. You may not recognize it, but you are. I'm just going to cut across to a website, Eve. I want to actually advertise something. So I'm cutting across to the Australian League of Rights main website, and you'll see the three videos that were done last week. And today's video will be up on Thursday Australian time. But I wanted to actually take us down to some books written by a Canadian. And a very interesting man, Oliver. I've met him and I've listened to his lectures. And in particular, these two books that I wanted to highlight, one was The Economics of Social Credit and Catholic Social Teaching, and also Social Credit Philosophy. Now, Oliver has also written Social Credit Economics and more recently Lives of Our Own, which has essentially got a very strong distributist analysis from a distributist perspective, distribution being a fair and equitable method of handing out the produce of the world, distributism. Those four books, they're advertised there, but you follow the links through and you're able to actually purchase them. I found his work compelling reading for my understanding. of what was Christian, what is Christian, and the encyclicals. And the thing is that I'm not a Roman, for my apologies or whatever, my inadequacies, but I do enjoy reading doctrine. I do enjoy reading where the popes or other important or significant people have done the research and developed their thinking. And so they've given instruction to at least guide or consider. You may not agree with the encyclicals, and I'm okay with not agreeing. The whole idea of robust debate, I think, is very, very important. But the thing is that those pre-thinking, those encyclicals, are well worth consideration. Now, Oliver has actually deciphered, if you like, or he's extracted some of the truths from those encyclicals and other teaching, and he's placed them in those booklets. They're not big books, but they certainly are compelling reading. Of how you would at least begin to orientate your thinking. Now, I talked about the mainstream media, the inordinate influence that it has over your life. It permeates everything, and the daily programs that are on the TV. TV's everywhere you look, so it's unrelenting. The programming never, never stops. Well, the first thing, in my view, is to actually turn the TV off. It's to get a book out, similar to what Oliver's done or what Oliver has done, and read it and study it. And then you realize that, hang on, I've been thinking the wrong way. My thoughts have actually been scrambled, and if anything, I'm a victim of brainwashing. I'm not actually seeing the real world, the natural world. And that, to me, is what Oliver has helped me understand through his books. Eve.
Yeah, there was a lot of brainwashing yesterday on Super Bowl Sunday.
Okay.
And I cannot stand that day because I can't stand football. That's American football, I mean.
Yeah.
But American football is a big hoax. Who cares who's going to win the Super Bowl or whatever, but it's a brainwashing day. And they do a good job. In the half, they have the entertainment, and they have the advertisers. They change their ads for that particular day and show all kinds of brainwashing ideas. And it's horrendous. Even children were in the halfway show. I just glimpsed of it. I don't know exactly what they were doing, but they were dancing with a prostitute. She was in the middle of the anyway, I just watched her, and then I saw the kids on the side, dressed in white like angels or something like that. It was absolutely sickening. But then that's the way that day is reserved. Once a year, it seems to be the most important part of the year for Americans. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl Day. They have other names for it, but I mean, it's absolutely, when you're talking about mainstream media, that is mainstream media. They've firsthand, apparently 100 million people are watching this.
Yeah.
100 million.
I've actually had a different take. We have the grand finals and all that sort of stuff, or we have cricket or whatever. So beer and circuses, I think of the Romans when they were on their knees and collapsing. They lost their political will. They lost their political will to survive and to fight for the survival of themselves. And so the barbarians came in, but it was the rot inherent in the people themselves. Beer and circuses, so it's no different. But I might just point out something in Australia, what we've been experiencing. And that was we had the bushfires, and the bushfires are not unprecedented. But the fact is that the bushfires were, hundreds of fires were lit by arsonists, and so they were actually propagating the fires. Now, the weather itself was not an horrendous high winds. It wasn't sort of conducive to actually produce the fires, but the fires were still going. And on top of that, of course, the media presentation was that this was all unprecedented, never happened before, and of course that's false, and that it's a direct consequence of climate change. And of course that's a complete narrative that they've come up with. On top of that, On top of that, then we have the Prime Minister being herded. Why was he on holidays at this critical time? Well, the fact is we've got Country Fire Authority, we've got Metropolitan Fire Service, we've got local councils, emergency services, we've got state government departments, we've got access to the military as support, we've only got to ask for it, and all of these things. Why the dickens would we need our Prime Minister to be in Australia at this time in order to coordinate? That's not his function. He's simply a minister, and his function is to actually be part of that parliamentary representation, and he's avoiding all of that. What the media is calling for is essentially an administrator of the whole nation for every single incident. Now, the media is unrelenting. They are deconstructing him at every turn because he's not insisting on centralizing more power. And then when he starts to yield, they take the pressure off, but only when he starts to yield. So the Prime Minister is now advocating that the federal government will administer certain parts of fire management, which is absurd, because it's actually local knowledge that is the best way to deal with fire management. The people who actually live there, who fought fires over the years, they know how to manage it the best. And then insisting that, of course, incorporated within that fire management is going to be world government in the form of Agenda 2030, the United Nations Climate Action proposals. And so he's implementing world government as a consequence of it. Now, this is a direct consequence of the inordinate power that the media has over our government. Inordinate power. Now, you've got to sort of ask the question, well, who elected the media to have this much power? Who gave them so much power? Mainstream media. And I put it to you that this is all part of a long-term strategy. It's part of monopoly capitalism. It's part of the fact that the, if you like, the central banks of central banks, International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the Bank of International Settlements, Trilateral Commission, Council for Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, all these different groupings of central people and think tanks in order to bring about world government. They're all working together to do it. The mainstream media is their handmaid. Now, the only way to actually regenerate yourself as an individual in your community is actually to stop listening to them and start thinking for yourself. How do you manage fire in your area? How do you manage it? How do you manage climate change? Well, you take into account the climate change in your home. It might be as straightforward as, well, you've got some big windows. Maybe I need to put some heavy insulating curtains in the right fashion and the shape, some pelmet boxes to stop the heat coming in. Maybe I need to insulate the ceiling. Maybe I need to do other things, put some bushes in a certain area. These are local answers to a problem, and that's how you do it. If it's on a particularly hot day, take your jumper off. You don't need the federal government to make these decisions for you. You manage it locally. And so it is with the decision to manage your fire management. You look around your home and you think, well, I need to reduce the fuel load. I need to perhaps put a sprinkler system up. These are all the things that you do in order to manage locally. You don't need to hand power to a world government. Because every time you're handing power, they'll come up with a plan. They'll come up with a plan, all right, and it won't work because they would not have a clue what's going on in your part of ship, in your area, in your home. They wouldn't have a clue. How the dickens are they supposed to plan for something like that? And every plan, every time a plan comes into being or comes up for suggestion, every plan is an opportunity to stop you from thinking yourself and you responding to the situation. But you can't do it unless you actually accept responsibility. Responsibility. You respond to the situation. Regeneration starts with the individual. Eve.
Yeah, it's you know what, I can summarize that too. It's a question of money. And 99.9% is a question of money in this type of system. But the world is starting to be frustrated. The creation of chaos is imminent, and more and more do we hear and see the threats of war, the scaring people, this is what's going to happen, the crash, the big crash. So even the elites like Bloomberg and the Rockefeller or whoever, these people are warning us that there's going to be a crash. There's going to be a crash. So, and they're just setting up the people to achieve their goal of Agenda 2030. Mm-hmm. And by the time the 10 years are done from now, maybe they'll achieve world power completely through the United Nations or through the army, an army state.
Mm-hmm. Martial law.
So basically the thing, like when I talked about the battle of David and Goliath, we're talking about quite a big machine we have to fight. But you know what? We're not alone. We are not alone. God is there to look after us, and he's going to make sure eventually that the house of cards will come crumbling down. I am sure of that. The elites think that they have won the war. They've got it on the American dollar bill. We've achieved with success our endeavor. So everything is in place for them. They have the Georgia Guidestone, for example, the future, what's going to be. They even know the languages that are going to be spoken in the next, I don't know how many years. Agenda 2030 means 2030, but it could be longer, could be shorter. Who knows? If there is a war, it could happen before that. But the short of it is that there is something in the plans, but we're not alone. God will give us the victory, and it's only a matter of time. The elites are so happy that they've won their... I cannot fathom that. They don't understand. Why do they not understand? They have this... Rothschild said that he would ignore every constitution of every country. I'm not worried about the constitution. We've got the power. We've got the power. We've achieved world governance. So this is what it's all about, basically.
Yeah. No, I understand where you're going on that. Eve, the thing that I look on in this circumstances we find ourselves in is that the money power is defying the natural order. It's defying natural law. Inherent in every individual is the desire to find expression and to be free, to be creative, to make their own decisions. I know that there's an inordinate lot of people who are caught up in if you like, the narrative, but it's inherent in each one of them. And given a jolt of circumstances and of life, and they will change their point of view. And they'll look towards the natural world, the natural law, for guidance and inspiration, and not the telly, not the TV, not the method of programming. So to me, it's the regeneration always starts with the individual, and it's personal choices. Now we're at the 34-minute mark. Eve, our time has just certainly slipped by. Have you got any closing comments?
Yes, I'll make it very, very brief. If there's a God, there is a devil. And I found this particular saying here. We've got it in our study session book. And it's in Ephesians 6, chapter 6, verse 12. And it says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." So we're fighting that Goliath. And it says right there in the Old Testament something that we have to put up with.
Yeah, I appreciate where you're coming from, and that to me, that scripture in particular, shows that it's a spiritual battle. It's actually a battle in the heart and soul of individuals. It's not a physical battle. You're not talking about taking up arms and whatever. It's actually a spiritual battle in our intellect and where we direct our energies. And the two commandments that Eve spoke about, one was to love your neighbor as you love yourself. The other is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. And you can't do that if you're a slave. That man in that dystopian squalor that he lived in San Francisco, how could he turn around and joyously love God when he was in such a state of chaos? He needs to be set free so that he can love God. And that, to me, is what the economic system is for. It's only a method coming together, people coming together so that they can have sufficiency. And it's not an end in itself. It's not an end in itself. The end in itself is the development of the individual. It's what each man can find his own fig tree to sit under and be not afraid. Yeah. Thank you so much for today, Eve. I really enjoyed it. Thank you,
I
ladies.
appreciate it.
No worries.
Thank
Thank
you very
you,
much.
ladies and gentlemen. Cheers.